Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. This is Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista.
Hello.
Oh, we're excited to be here, as we are every Wednesday on KCNR 1460 AM and 96.5 FM. If you'd like to call in here, Ben would love to take your question either on or off the air. You can call us at 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567, or you can type it into cookinglikeapropodcast.net. And that's actually some place where you can put in any cooking question any time in the week, and we will get that question and bring it to the show.
You got it.
So cookinglikeapropodcast.net. So there's a lot of different things that come into cooking, and I know it's a cooking show, but we do try to talk about, you know, things related to cooking besides just strictly food. And here, this is one of those things that it needs to be taught at the, like, along with knife skills, kind of at the beginning of learning and interpreting recipes and such for yourself. And that's reading a recipe and being able to measure things, being able to scaling up and down. A lot of people don't even understand the term scaling. But it's quite important. I remember, Krista, when you were doing the cooking for, the school at our church at Little Country, and it was, cooking for four versus cooking for, 60 or 70 kids all having tacos. You better know how to scale.
That's something that I kind of want to, it's on my heart to start teaching people is, everybody's so focused on this is a recipe for four, this is a recipe for six.
Mm-hmm.
And they're stuck on that, where we just go back to, it's a recipe for one. Mm-hmm. And then we multiply it out. So, and I was talking to somebody a couple of days ago that, we prep these big items and have all this stuff on hand, but each plate that goes out, we are cooking for one person.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, we are prepared to cook for 100 maybe, but we focus on that one person. So if you can get that down to one, then you can multiply it out. Then you can extend it to four. You can extend it to eight people. You can extend it to 20 people, things like that.
Yeah, and normally what we'll do is we'll always try even numbers, because definitely in the restaurant business, more often than not, it was an even number of two people as far as two guests at a table, or four guests or six, just because, generally speaking, the majority of people coming in were couples, or in, they came in pairs. So the recipes for example, what they were putting together, for the cookbook, or they're really going to be for two or for four or for six, because that way you don't have to move them around too much. But scaling is that trick. And let's say you go to a website, or you go online. Again, we didn't have online back when I started, but now you can go online, find a recipe, but check to make sure that it's the recipe, when you get the list of ingredients, that it's allowing you to scale. There should be a button there that says scale. I don't know if that's something that's common, because I don't go online looking for recipes.
Well, ours says serving, so if we have our soup recipe on there, I was just looking at today, it's for eight people, because it's a pot of soup.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to make it for a larger gathering, say at Thanksgiving for 16 people, then you can take up to 16 servings.
Yeah, well, and it's just, yeah, because then you're just doubling everything. But, you might be cooking for two, you might be cooking for 50, but I think that understanding that you're really, what you're doing when you're scaling is you are adjusting the quantities of the ingredients. It's as simple as that, either increasing or decreasing, but you're doing that to every single ingredient. And to be honest, not all things scale equally, and it'd be nice if they did, but there are times where, especially in baking, that things don't scale, but generally scaling, doubling something. If it's one cup, then you put in two cups. If it's 1 ounce, you put in 2 ounces. If it's, two teaspoons, you put in a tablespoon and a third, or, whatever those measurements are.
For the most part, it does. If you get into commercial cooking, we move into weights We don't use cups and teaspoons and tablespoons. It's more accurate to use weight. The other day, we were going to have pasta. And I was looking at the box when it says that 2 ounces is a serving. So I took out the scale and went, okay, 2 ounces of pasta. There's going to be 4 of us eating. So I multiplied it. So that's 8 ounces. And 8 ounces of pasta was perfectly enough for all of us to eat. But it was by weight. It was not half a box. It wasn't a cup. Because, yeah, you know, especially when you work with flour, too, you know, a cup of flour, if you tamp it down, is different than a cup of flour that's been fluffy and
or sifted.
Yeah. So there's weight is more consistent.
Yeah. Either weight or, but in a lot of things, actually in most things, weight and butter are almost identical. For example, 8 ounces of butter equals a cup. And there's 8 ounces in a cup, whether liquid or in weight.
Yeah.
So those things, you know, aren't it. But learn ounces, learn weight, also volume, for measurements or something you need to know. But you mentioned, Krista, one word that is really kind of at the heart of all this, and that's scale, as in, do you have a scale? Do you have a weight scale at home? And if you don't, you need one. I would recommend one that first off has a tear. You need a tear setting, because what a tear will do is if you set a bowl on top of the scale, and then and let's say the bowl weighs 13 ounces, you hit the tear, and the tear takes away the weight of the bowl.
It zeroes it out.
Yeah, so it zeroes it out. So if you're using, you know, like-sized pans and pots and bowls, it can save you an awful lot of time by using the tear. But you really want a scale that will alternate and give you the option of either in ounces, which ounces go to pounds, 16 ounces in a pound, or grams. Yeah, because grams is something that when it comes to baking, and I know we made some pizza. Happy birthday, Isaac. I don't know if my 15-year-old's listening, but he just had his 16-year-old birthday. And I got him a pizza stone. I should say we got him a pizza stone, because every 16-year-old should have a pizza stone, and he will be one of the best pizza makers ever. I just, you know, learning how to make pizza and learning, getting you doing it multiple times and getting used to the touch, getting used to, you know, the stickiness, getting used to the lightness. There's so much. It's kind of like bread, you know, basically the same thing. You're making a dough, but there's a lot in dough making that has to do with touch.
And that's something you have to learn and something you have to fail at few times before you start to go, nope, that's not right. Yep, that's right. You start to have a relationship with your flour.
Yeah. So anyway, that is an important thing. It's an important thing to be able to touch it. You eventually get to the point with other proteins when things are cooking. I can tell by looking, well, how it's done, because there are indicators whether the juices come to the top, whether something's plumping up and those kind of things. But yes, a scale, be sure that you have one. They're very inexpensive. Again, make sure you get one that has a ounces, grams, and then also where you can tear things, because it's a TARE, so it's not like tearing a piece of paper.
Yes.
It's tearing, meaning replacing that weight. So yep, get yourself a scale. Again, you want to know how to portion. Another example of this would be, our dog, Remy, gets his food, which is sweet potatoes, which are mashed. And then he also gets either rice or oats, and then chicken. And we do a mixture of this stuff. So last night we got all of his ingredients together, and my wife just portioned out equal parts of the rice and the sweet potatoes, mixed those together. And then I just took the chicken and processed it, you know, cooked it, fine diced it, and then just bagged it up in 3 ounce portions. So in the morning, you know, when you prep something, you allow yourself a lot of leeway, a lot of extra time. So it's 3 times as fast, 4 times as fast in the morning with everything going on to just say, you know, boom.
Grab a bag.
Yeah, warm up his stuff, throw it in the bag, throw it in his bowl, and it's one more thing you can click off the table.
I think that's where we do a lot of sauces. A lot of sauces we try and do a bulk batch and then portion it out so that we have it ready to go. We had our tacos all portioned out, so we made tacos really quick last night because it was all ready to go.
Yeah, our freezer is pretty well full of portioned out things. So it basically what it is, you know, when you're cooking something, even if you're cooking for two people, it doesn't mean you can't make enough sauce and you make an extra quart or so because it's easier to make then, and then portion it out in 2-ounce portions, put it in something you can freeze and off to the freezer, and the next time you need a demi-glace or something, you don't have to go through the whole process. You just pull a couple ounces out of the freezer, and you're ready to go. So we're going to take a quick break. We appreciate you listening here at Cooking Like a Pro. Chef Cal, Mr. Chef, back in just a moment.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one.
Experience Glowing Wild, an illuminated wildlife lantern festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world. Plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Have you ever wanted to unlock your musical potential? Cascade Curations not only has great music, art, and fashion, we also offer fun and exciting music lessons for all ages and skill levels. Whether you dream of playing the piano, guitar, drums, or vocals, our instructors will guide you every step of the way. With flexible scheduling and personalized instruction, you'll be playing your own tunes in no time. Don't just listen to music, create it. Call or text us at 530-255-4855 to book your first lesson. Cascade Curations, where we believe anyone can learn to play their own song.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro, and hey, we'd like to take this time to thank Charlou's Tap House, formerly Mary's Pizza Shack, way back when. You know, Charlou was Mary's grandson, so you know, he's got all the secret recipes, but we'd like to thank them for sponsoring our cooking show and our podcast here. Charlou's located just south in the Gateway Shopping Center, and whether you're looking for authentic homemade Italian pizza, juicy burgers, delicious sandwiches, crisps, entree salads, or scrumptious selection of appetizers, no meal would also or either be complete without fresh, creamy Italian gelato made in-house. So Charlou's the place for you, a relaxing lunch gathering. They got a beautiful banquet room they've added, as well as their beer wall, so you can come and check out their premier beer wall. But I'll tell you, the thing that I think is the most exciting right now going on down there is their addition to the adventure room. Serving all your kids' birthday needs. Just a beautiful room, an arcade with just multiple bouncy houses for them to jump, bounce, leap, and play in. And again, as I mentioned, the arcade, top it off, they can actually have the lasting memory of working with the master pizza maker himself, Charlou. He'll be teaching them how to personally create their very own pizza. So come in for Italian, traditional Italian food. And just like Nana used to make it all. Family-friendly atmosphere, and also get the savings from their exclusive rewards program, where great food, fun, and family come together. Charlou's Tap House. So we were working together a few days ago, me and my wife at home, and And I had some potatoes, so I went ahead and cooked off some potatoes. And we want to talk a little bit about bound salad. We're going to start talking about potato salad here. But it was interesting because my wife did a little bit different. I always, I cook my potatoes, I dice them up. Then generally mayonnaise is like the first thing I put in, and then I season them from there. Onion, celery, the basic stuff that you put in, bacon, green onions, whatever you want to put in your potato salad. But I wanted my wife, Mrs. Chef, to explain her history on that, because I actually followed her instructions when I made this a few days ago, and it really came out nice.
This is the way I grew up with potato salad. I grew up with a baked potato salad first off. Now, you did boil the potatoes, so it was similar the process after that, but traditionally it was a baked potato that we would peel. First you would bake it whole.
Yeah.
Then you would take the skin off, which you did. You actually boiled yours whole, and then we took the skin off. Yeah.
But we also, when we took the skin off, we used a different technique, and that was something that my grandma showed me, and that was the back of a butter knife, the back side of the butter knife, not the blade side that you would cut with, but the back, because you don't want to cut it in the potato, but you do want to scrape off the
You hold it kind of like you would a paring knife. So you almost kind of pare it, but using the back of the butter knife. So, and actually this was kind of interesting, and he brought this up earlier today, that we went back and forth in creating this potato salad. He boiled the potatoes, then I came in and peeled them, then he diced them, and then together we started coming up with a combination of oil and vinegar. And it's a one-to-one ratio, and we had gone down to Napa a few months ago, and we got these really nice infused olive oil and infused white balsamic vinegars.
Yeah, we used the vinegar we used was a Sicilian lemon, so it was infused with that, and it was a really nice, again, white balsamic. And then the oil was actually infused with Madagascar black peppercorns, and it was really deep. So it's kind of unique that we just kind of came up with some fairly obscure oil and vinegar ingredients to start with.
Yeah, so what you do is you take a one-to-one ratio of oil and vinegar, and you simply toss the potatoes in that and then let them set for a while. Let them, and you can let them marinate overnight even. And if you do that prep beforehand, if you're going to make a salad the next day, then after it's set, then start adding your seasoning, your celery, if you're going to do any boiled egg, et cetera, and then add, lastly, the mayonnaise to kind of pull it all together.
Yeah, and you don't, and what I realized and noticed is you really didn't need that much mayonnaise.
No.
Not nearly, maybe a third of the mayonnaise that I would normally put in, which of course is going to make it a lot healthier. But I think, remember, potatoes are going to be very, very porous. They're going to really soak up a lot. And they really soaked up that lemon and that black peppercorn flavor. And that's what I thought made it just a really nice potato salad. And again, also the going light on the mayonnaise.
And even the next day, it was even better.
Yeah, so again, just some minced celery, one-eighth inch squared, we would call it like a bunoise, but just kind of like a fine chop, not a mince, but a fine chop of some celery, and we had some onion, and of course, always a little bit of secret salt. I mean, we've talked about that before. It's just a mixture of salt, granulated garlic, and white pepper, and it's something that we use in just about anything and everything that we make.
And also with the potato salad, I typically add a little bit of celery salt, too, just to kind of enhance that celery a little bit.
Well, celery is just one of those, it may not be a flavor that you always recognize, but it's certainly a flavor that you almost always start with when it comes to French cooking, because the foundation of all French cooking is stock, period. That's just where it starts. French cooking starts with stocks. And a stock starts with a mirepoix, and a mirepoix is always celery, onion, and carrot. So that celery, and onion, and carrot they provide this background flavor, that all stocks are going to want, whether it's seafood, poultry, lamb, beef, salmon, it doesn't matter. The only thing you might change is carrots do have, the orange pigmentation in them. So if you want a light colored sauce, maybe like a seafood, like a fish velouté or maybe a crab or clam stock, then just take out the carrots and replace them with leeks, and you pretty much get that same flavor. And celery is something that you don't really see. It's kind of like the uncommon or unsung hero.
Which is interesting because I grew up with a lot of celery. My dad put celery in everything. We had it in our eggs in the morning. We had it in our potato salad. It was a very common ingredient for me cooking growing up.
And also remember, this is a side note, but you know, if, when you think about the vegetable that you're going to be eating, think about how it sits in the and where we're actually, you know, where it's coming from. But when we get heavy rains during particular parts of the season, where celery or romaine lettuce, where things grow facing up, then that rain causes a lot of mud. So you want to make sure that you always, you know, clean your celery and your romaine, just any place where that dirt might have gotten into.
Which I pulled out because lettuce was so expensive last week, and I just bought a single head of romaine, brought it home, and literally every single leaf had a pile of dirt in the bottom of it. It was very covered.
No, there was enough. You could have just grown some more. But,
yeah.
But anyway, so a balanced salad, again, is anything that's going to be bound together. In this case, a lot, quite often it's mayonnaise, could be anything, could be a little bit of oil and vinegar. I think of a lot of these really healthy salads that are made with things like lentil and different grains, wild rice. There's just so many things that are out there. Matter of fact, I'd head out to, if you haven't been out there, out to Airport Road, was that Moore's?
Moore's Flour Mill.
Moore's Flour Mill out there. Boy, do they have a selection. So if you head out there, tell them Chef Cow and Chef Krista from Cooking Like a Pro sent you. But they got so many great things that you can get, and they're just healthy. I mean, and organic. And whether you want to get your oats, and also the pricing. The pricing is so, I mean, for the quality that you're getting, the pricing is fantastic. So if you haven't been there, hit their website and check it out and write out there. But, you know, the other things that fall into that category, things like coleslaw, bean salads. I know I look back and when we first started out in the old days, we'd have a brunch and we seemed like we'd always say everything was bound salads. It was coleslaw. It was macaroni salad. It was potato salad. It was three or four bean salad. You know, it were, those were the type of salads that.
Carrot salad. Yeah.
Beet salad. We used to do a salad that I used to really enjoy. It was bacon, cheddar, and peas. We put like some red onion in there, just a little bit of light mayonnaise in it. But again, just salads that are bound together. And there's then, so when you break salads apart, basically you have bound salads and you have lettuce salads. Okay, and then you can have also add the addition of a fruit salad as another category. But, you know, lettuce salads, things with romaine or head lettuce, wedge salads, that kind of stuff.
Well, you don't have to default to mayonnaise thinking that process like we did.
Oil and vinegar.
You get the oil and vinegar first and try different vinegars, try different oils. The last week when I made the potato salad, I used an avocado oil.
And stay away from seed oil. Stay away from seed oil.
Yeah, we're not going to go there. So avocado oil, and then I used a straight white balsamic. In the past, I've used a red wine vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use different flavors. You can use a red wine vinegar and an olive oil. You can use avocado oil. And I forgot when I made it before, I added a touch of walnut oil, just a little bit, just to give it a little bit of dimension in that vinegar and oil base.
Yeah, they say walnuts are good. I was reading something today that says walnuts attack the parasites in our body. I don't know. Yeah, I thought so too. You know, it's weird if nothing else. But, anyway, so there's a lot of different salads that are out there, and I think you can have fun with those. You know, it used to just be that head lettuce salad back in the day, but now you can get creative. You can get creative. There's all kinds of different dressings that you can do. I always recommend Paul Newman's dressings just because, he was one of my favorites, and all the proceeds go to, you know, to kids, different kids' charities that are out
there. I'm curious. When you had salad growing up as a kid, all we had was iceberg lettuce. That's all we knew.
Yeah, that's pretty much us too. You know, that's kind of all there was.
Yeah.
You know, you really didn't see a lot of the leafy greens until later on. One thing that we always had was chard too, but most of our leafy greens were always cooked. You know, they would stew them, you know, or, you know, maybe take, you know, chard and make a rhubarb pie out of something like that with rhubarb. But there were a lot of different heavy, very fibrous lettuces that we would have, but most of those were cooked. But that doesn't mean you can't throw them in a salad.
Well, that's why I kind of found it interesting. Kind of about the 90s, the field greens, the mixed greens came out. It was like, don't use the iceberg anymore. Yeah. Let's use this. It's got all these different textures and colors.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but you know, the thing about that is that generally, you know, when you come up with a dish, the you know, the liquid component needs to match. And so often you see a really heavy laden maybe in density and thickness, but also maybe just in heavily flavored, you know, component that you're gonna make a dressing out of and then put it on a lettuce that's really light. And you mentioned
it
field greens.
Down.
We used to call it mescaline mix
back
in the 90s.
Yeah.
And that's what we used a lot in our, when we were competing. And the thing about mescaline mix is you almost don't need hardly anything on it because you got the rocket and you got the frisée and you got the chicory and you got, you know, those, they're like baby lettuces and red and green lettuce and all that. And you can literally, you got this abundance of flavor that have bitters and spices and pepper notes and all kinds of cool things. But anyway.
So here's a quick trick. Just add some vinegar to a really thick dressing like a ranch or a thousand and make it into a lighter dressing.
There you go. There's the tip. Write that one down. Cooking like a pro. Chef Cal, Chef Krista, we will be back in just a minute.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Oh, this is the night, it's a beautiful night, and we call it a Valentine.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef here. And, you know, I wanted to talk about this. We didn't get to it last week, but I wanted to talk about with the inflammatory concerns that we have with our bodies. Yeah, I wanted to talk about anti-inflammatory foods. So things that would help you when you have, you know, whether it's pain, sometimes redness, swelling, even heat. Sometimes it can get warm when you have these almost kind of like allergy reactions. You need to know, you know, is my diet causing any of those things? So you can start looking at anti-inflammatory foods, and one of the things that I noticed is when you put these together, you have like a list of fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and then different oils, fats, and herbs and spices. You can literally take this and make, as we were just talking about, you know, bound salads, or maybe like a bound dish, you could take and make it out of that. Because if you take a vegetable that would be anti-inflammatory, things like, you know, all of your berries fall into that category. And then, you know, your tomatoes and your broccoli and tomato season. Oop, I'm excited about that. And even avocados and peppers. So if you take these things, for example, let's just take avocados. And then you go down and say, okay, what kind of nut or seed, which is anti-inflammatory, that I could add to that? So maybe we're going to go ahead and we just mentioned walnuts. Let's add some walnuts to that. So we have diced avocados, walnuts. We're also going to add maybe some diced tomato in there. Then we're going to come down to our oil and fats. And just as Krista mentioned about using avocado oil. We use a lot of avocado oil now. We're going to use the avocado oil to bind that together. And then you get down to an herb and spice, so you can go that those other different directions as far as your taste buds go. And you got fresh garlic, you got ginger, turmeric. These are all great things for anti-inflammatory. Again, garlic, ginger, turmeric, black pepper, cayenne pepper, almost any pepper is going to... Matter of fact, thinking of pepper, you just bought some pepper. I know we're going to talk about African foods in the next segment, but what was that? You went to that African, where is the African store?
It is over on Hilltop Drive. Okay. Kind of, is it kitty corner to the subway? It's right there on Mistletoe. Mistletoe, okay. And Hilltop, kind of right there.
All right. Yeah. And you brought some pepper home, and I did smell it. We haven't used it yet.
It is
very unique.
It's very unique. It's not pungent. What I expected. No, and I actually took a little bit and put it on my tongue. It is extremely stingy. So I'm going to have to work with it and see how, with my lack of heat tolerance, how I can use it.
You're evolving. You are evolving. I can tell you as your husband and as a chef that you're evolving when it comes to your heat level, because it used to be lower than it is now.
It is. But actually, I discovered this. There's different areas of types of heat that hit different areas of your mouth. This particular one was very forward on the tip of my tongue. Like jalapenos, I can't stand it because they go straight to the back of my throat and make me want to cough. But this one was very forward and very, it was just a different type of sting. So I'm curious to work with it, maybe do a little spoke with it. What could we come up with?
Yeah, well, and I think that that's one of the keys is getting used to capsaicin being the active ingredient in chilies. If you look at the around the world, it cultures where pepper is, well, first off, if you go way back in pepper, in history, pepper was actually a currency as valuable, you know, it was used as money. So it's spread out a lot. And because it's spread out through, you know, the different travels back in those days of, you know, Christopher Columbus and Marco Polo and all that stuff, it was able to spread and create this variety of peppers from all over the world where if you go to the an Asian culture, you're getting into the serranos and the smaller chilies, and, you know, and then you're going down south in the southern hemisphere, south of us down in the Hispanic areas, and you know, you're getting jalapenos and some that are fire roasted. If you roast and smoke a jalapeno, you get what's called a chipotle. So if you've ever wondered where a chipotle comes from, and then you can go into the Latin countries and you start getting the different chilies that they mix into their foods. And if you go to these countries where the chilies are one of the more dominant flavoring elements, you have less cardiovascular concerns and you have, you know, age limits where the age expectancies are higher and just a lot, just much more healthy for you, because sweating is the way your body, you know, air conditions itself.
Regulates.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with sweating at the table. Well, I mean, not too sweating too much, but anyway, so I had opened up a can, speaking of sweating, I'd opened up a can of jalapenos. They were the pickled jalapenos, not the tamed ones, but fairly strong. But they had carrots in there, and if you've ever wondered why those carrots are in there, they actually, it forms what they call an escabeche, which is, it's the carrots, they pick up that heat from the jalapenos, and escabeche is like a real spicy, I'd probably use the term like relish, that you'll see in a lot of Hispanic or Mexican cultures. It's just something that, you know, I think they're great, but, you know, they, you know, a carrot is a porous vegetable. Even though it's a dense vegetable, it's still porous, and it's just going to soak in a lot of that heat element.
Yeah, it didn't pass my test.
Yeah, I say, here, sweetheart, try this carrot.
No.
Anyway,
it didn't go well.
It wasn't in the mouth long, let's put it that way. But anyway, so if you're having it, and I guess this, you know, comes down to the whole, you know, adage that you are what you eat. you know, think about that. If your body is reacting in a certain way, the first thing you should look at is your diet. And there's a variety of other things, you know, but you want a balanced diet. You want exercise, of course. You want, you know, sleep. If you need stress management, you need whatever these things are. But look to the food. What is it that I could be eating that's causing that? And a lot of that we get from trial and error. But unfortunately, I think a lot of people will have, I know a lot of people fall in this category where they try to be adventurous and have something and just don't like it. And if they don't like it, then they quit being adventurous. And I remember having restaurants where somebody would come in and try something. If they didn't like it, I'll get you something else. I'm not going to charge you for it because you didn't like it. But I want people to try things.
I love to have blueberries. They are very anti-inflammatory.
Blueberries are very, yep. All berries fall into that category, and they're good for you. It's nice when it's, the season is good. Well, I noticed something that you and Isaac do at home, which is you've been taking the blueberries, and because, you know, the shelf life on blueberries is even if you treat them well, dry them off, rinse them, dry them, store them on a paper towel, make sure that they can breathe. Even if you go through all the processes of how to properly store them, you're still, they are a fruit that's going to mold quickly. And you guys have been tossing them in the freezer.
Yeah, just taking the little plastic box straight off the shelf, because we try and get a few days out of using them fresh, and they just pop them in the freezer, and they just hang out there.
Yeah, but you guys do the shake thing. See, unfortunately, I'm the only real breakfast person, it seems, in the family. Although, you know, sometimes you just need a stack of pancakes. You know, you need some French toast. You need, because that's how I was raised. But
of course, that is inflammatory food.
Of course it is. But I know that that you and our son are having fun with these. What are those little ninja things?
Yeah, they're little ninja blender.
Yeah, so I got them those for Christmas, and they've been thoroughly enjoying them the last few months, and I'm real impressed with our now 16-year-old that he's kind of a little bit of a mad scientist. And we've talked about him before, like he gets back there with his ramen. And in fact, that's one of the things I got him for his birthday was, other than the pizza stone, I got him a big container of yellow curry paste. Remember, it doesn't really matter what you're getting. If you can get something in a paste form versus a dried form, you're always better off. Not only is it going to dissolve better, but the flavor is going to be much more dominant.
It's more developed.
Yeah, and it's enough curry paste it lasts him a year.
Yeah, till he's
17. It's a year worth of Top Ramens, you know. But he's a Top Ramen kid. But again, he one thing about him when he eats his Top Ramen is this kid never uses the salt packet that's in there. I mean, because we've got stock around the house all the time. We've got, you know, all kinds of things for him to put in there. But I see him back there, and he's just got a seasoning in each hand, and he's putting it in there, and he's actually getting very, very creative.
So that's what we're doing with our shakes in the morning is, what fruit are we going to put in there? Are we going to put Greek yogurt? Are we going to do one of our fresh eggs that we've poached? And, you know, this morning, because I do put some milk in mine just for a little bit of creaminess, but I've got the blueberries, I've got bananas, I've got a poached egg from our chickens right out back.
Oh, yeah.
I've got Greek yogurt, I've got my AG1 powder in there, and literally in 30 seconds I've had breakfast. How long would it take you to eat an egg and a thing of yogurt and half a banana?
But I think with me, there's some satisfaction in digging a fork into something. I don't know, I like to have you... utensils in my hand. I've never been much for the smoothie person. I know it's a big thing. A lot of people out there doing it, and you guys do it, and I think it's great. And I guess if somebody made it for me, you know, I certainly wouldn't have a problem, you know, with it. But I like to bite into things. I mean, I'd rather have my eggs in an omelet. You know, those chickens are working so hard out there, and we get a dozen eggs every 2 days. You know, we get about 6 or 7 eggs a day, and they're just beautiful. They're just beautiful little eggs, and it just, I had some corned beef and cabbage the other day. It was after the corned beef and cabbage. I just had corned beef and hash, as we had some diced potatoes left over, and the corned beef diced it up and had these little, our littlest chicken. What is he? I call him Fluffy. Fluffy.
Fluffernutter. She's Fluffernutter. A silky. She's a silky.
Yeah. So she makes these little small eggs. She's a small chicken. She's like half or a third the size of the other ones, but she's so cute. She's got this little hair thing going. I don't know what you call that, but it looks like
top knot.
It looks like a I don't know, crew cut, not a crew cut, but a
kind of like Rod Stewart.
Yeah. He's we ought to call him Rod. But anyway, it's a cute chicken, and we get his little or her little eggs, and I lightly poached like four of those and put them on top, and they were delicious. Remember, when you're poaching your eggs, a little bit of vinegar in there, hold the egg together. You don't want it boiling, you want it simmering in exactly 3 minutes. I can't tell you how many people I've taught how to make the perfect poached egg. And do we have that on our website?
I think so. I thought we had something back in the archives. I have to bring that one forward.
In the archives, we'll bring that one out. But anyway, we're going to be back in just a moment. We're going to take our last quick break here. We're going to be coming back at Cooking Like a Pro with some talk about some food from the continent of Africa. So hang around for that, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Attention contractors and payroll professionals. Are you ready to master prevailing wage and certified payroll? Join O2 Employment Services on April 4th for expert training that keeps you compliant. Prevailing wage, certified payroll, compliance made simple. Contractors and payroll professionals, sign up today at O2ES.com. Join O2 Employment Services on April 4th for expert training that keeps you compliant. Prevailing wage, certified payroll, compliance made simple. Sign up today at O2ES.com.
Join Token's radio show every Tuesday night starting at 6 on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as hosts Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy Tuesday nights at 6 on KCNR.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue open and free every other Sunday right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro, Chef, Mr. Chef and Mrs. Chef. And I wanted to talk a little bit about African food because one of the things I wanted to mention is a local group here that is doing some African food, African cuisine. It's a place called Sizzles downtown. And every Saturday from 12 to 2, you can go in there and have a charity show you how to make some amazing African food. It's called Amazing Alheri. Alheri is actually African for grace. So it's Amazing Grace, African cuisine pop-up restaurant. So it's, again, 12 to 5 Saturdays. They're located at 1440 Plaster Street. And I've done a lot of African food. I've done a lot of every kind of food. I mean, we used to do 4 special events a month. This is just my first restaurant, okay? This is before I ventured off into all the rest of them. But 4 events, and one would be a winemaker dinner. One might be a special event. Maybe there's a holiday that month. One would be a Chef Cow Chef show. And so we'd always have, maybe one was all crab. Maybe, 5, 6 courses of all crab. Probably like $35. Yeah, mm-hmm. Times have changed. But we did that every month. We would have four events, and we did that for 18 years. So that's a lot of events. I mean, we're talking a ton, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different ones. So we were
to have explored a lot of different continents and countries
and cultures. And we were always, I was always looking for, I would be asking people. I remember I had a radio show back then as well. And I was like, okay, what do you people want to see? Okay, I'll do whatever you want. Cause we can always figure it out. And, just like we mentioned that there's an African store here in town. Maybe you can go check them out, get some ingredients, get some ideas, you know, Google it on your phone and come up with something kind of different, kind of cool. But I know that most in fact, all of the meals that I did were all for different ministries. I know we did two dinners with All Food for Kenya, for the hospital that our church built there. We also did it for the Congo. They were sending Bibles over there to the Congo. We did for the Congo. I did a lot of stuff that was up in the northern area, like Morocco and Ethiopia. You know, foods from that area where you're kind of coming up with grains and things, but mostly rice. Rice is a big one, but you see a lot of yams and plantains, a lot of the things that they make, and potatoes and pumpkins still also, but things that are a little easier to grow. And a lot of times they just kind of do a one pot thing, and one pot they call a jollof, but it's basically a rice dish. And I think we would call it a stew. Kind of, they cook in something that's called a tangine, and it comes up to like a smokestack. And what that allows to happen is for all the steam and condensation that would normally come up. And if you smell your stew cooking, then there's aroma / flavor that's flowing out, and a tangine just kind of locks it in. It's kind of an interesting cooking tool.
The first time I'd ever seen one was at Williams Sonoma years ago. I thought, what is that? That is such an interesting contraption.
And that's, those are the fun things to get too. I know that we have a friend coming over, a dear friend coming over tomorrow. And the last time she lives at the coast. And the last time we were over there, we made a great big paella. And I was excited because I seen our paella pan, the other day, and it just got me thinking, oh, when she comes over, we need to do another paella, just something fun. Basically a big rice dish, but it's got shrimp and fish and chicken and usually shellfish, if not clams, mussels or maybe both. But just that comes down to like the tangine or the jollof. It's just a one-pot cooking. Like we would make stew, and we would serve stew. And that's all you would get, because stew had your vegetables, it had your meat. Well, you probably have some dipping bread to go with it, but everything was in there. Your starch was in there with your potatoes, your meat, there was the gravy, and then your carrots, your onions, your celery, your, corn, peas. Peas are always a good one to throw in there. So they're doing cooking classes, so you can go to Amazing Al Hair check out their cooking classes. It's just something, it's one other culture that's out there. And I think that that's always a fun thing to do. Remember, we have to eat. Why not make it fun? Huh? And one of the things I wanted to throw out there, and if you have any comments on this, maybe you can go to Cooking Like a Pro podcast, or just go to our culinary site, Culinarily Yours. And if you would like to see this, because it's something we're thinking about, as I'm getting older, I'm not going to be able to open up another restaurant. I just don't see the energy and all the, we are in California, just hiring practices and everything. The restrictions and guidelines and things have gotten pretty out of control. I know that because I go to other places and I see how not out of control they are, normally Tennessee, which is great. But anyway, we've been talking about doing a DiMicurios pop-up. So basically a pop-up restaurant, which would be bringing DiMicurios back into the North State here into Reading, and where we could do an event. Maybe it might be once a month, or something. I was talking to my brother about that as well. So, but if it's something that any of our listeners out there, I think we're told that we have about 1,400, 1,500 people that listen to the show, or if you know anyone that'd be interested in that, reach out to us and let us know, because we would be taking items that we did off the menu back then. And we did, you know, it was, of course, it was Dee McCarroll's Continental Style Restaurant. That's what we first called it. And we had to take off the word continental because people kept asking,
what does it mean?
Yeah, what's it mean? So we turned it to Dee McCarroll's French, Italian, American, because I was trained through a French apprenticeship. My cooking training is through Escoffier, right? The American Culinary Federation. It was a French-based apprenticeship program. But I'm Italian by heritage. So there was a lot of Italian that was going on in our family with the cookery. And then we're in America using American ingredients. And so it was kind of seemed like
we're on two different continents.
Yeah. So French, Italian, and American. But that's what Dee McCarroll's was.
And if you added African, that'd be yet another continent down there. So
there's enough of those. But if we wanted to do the Dee McCarroll's pop up, then it'd be something I'd like to see if there's a feeling for that out there. So I think that's something that I could handle. A pop up restaurant, you know, once every so often I can do. But one of the things was, because it was French cooking, is we did a lot of tableside. And that's one of the things that saddens me is all the things that we don't see anymore. You know, like I spent, I don't know, 20 years teaching people how to make ice carvings and doing them myself for over 40 years of doing ice carvings. And it's just part of the hospitality industry that you just don't see. And the tableside cookery, Steak Diane and Scampi and all those fun things. And I think that, you know, most things, as I notice, as I'm, you know, they come full circle and come back around. You know, things like chicken pot pie and meatloaf that, you know, you never even seen because people aren't cooking at home like they were back in the 60s when I was raised. But now those are things that you start seeing on menus and people think, oh, these are cool and they're unique. Well, it's because they didn't have that home experience of being able to try those things.
Everything comes back around. It's nothing new under the sun.
You know, there's definitely nothing new under the sun. Yeah, Solomon was very correct on that with the Ecclesiastes. I can't remember where it is, 4:1, I don't know, but you're right. So I think we take these things and we make them unique. We kind of change them, but a lot of these older ideas that were done, they were done because they worked, you know. And we did a Steak Diane where you take a beautiful filet and you rub it with some garlic, and then you rub it with some Dijon, and then you do a quick sear on it, and it gets the mushrooms and the brandy and the demi-glace, and it's just, tableside cookery kind of, well, I don't know if anybody ever really did it. We did it at Dee McCarroll's, of course, and there
Nello's does a little bit.
Jim down there, they do a little bit of that. Plus they have the salad tableside. I just think the thing about tableside is that, remember, we're going back to dinner and a movie, right? What's the movie? We know the dinner is the food. And the dinner can actually can express, you know, excitement beyond just the food too. So in that, thinking, it kind of becomes part of the movie as well. But that movie of having, you know, tableside, you know, conversation and tableside demonstration and whatever that is, you know, whether you're on a, you know, Napa Valley looking at the sunset going down, or you're on a cruise, whatever that ambient, you know, or the ambience that you have, that's a big part of it. Other than just, you know, because you don't want cooking to become drudgery, right? You want it to be fun. You want it to be exciting. You want to try new things and have fun. And that's how cooking is at home for us. And I'll tell you, sometimes Mrs. Chef just kind of goes nuts. And when she does, I leave her alone and she'll knock something together. And it's like, it's really cool. But the thing for me that's the coolest, because it always tastes good. But the thing is that she thinks, her thinking, her culinary thinking comes from a little bit of a different background, well, a big different background maybe, but from just a different perspective. So she comes up with things that I don't necessarily think about. And I think that's what makes it exciting.
Yeah, we could do a nice tater tot casserole with green peas on the side.
yeah, that was Pop's favorite thing to do. That, yeah, you know, we're gonna have to put that one in the cookbook, I think. That was just such a foundational. I had never had tater tot casserole before.
didn't have mushroom soup and it had celery soup in it.
Cream of celery soup. Again, a celery being one of those main dominant flavors that you can't go wrong with. But anyway, a lot of, opportunities that are out there. I think when you bring in a culture, and a culture doesn't mean you need to leave the United States. You know, you can have, Boston style clam chowder in California or Manhattan style red clam chowder from the East Coast. You can go down to the South and have Cajun food, which is very much French influenced because that's kind of where the French, you know, settled from the cuisine wise. But again, just think about different places and different things you can do and ways to be able to make food something more than just, filling your stomach.
It's just exploring sauces and seasonings. You could take one piece of chicken, cook it the same way every single night, and do a different sauce and seasoning every night and travel the entire world all year.
There you go. And if people want to get more information on how to find us, where do they find us at?
Our main website is culinarilyyours.net. And if you want to find the podcast recordings, you can find it on Apple and Spotify under Cooking Like a Pro Podcast.
Sounds good. So we appreciate you listening, folks, and spending this this time with us, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef. And just like to say, just be intentional out there. Just be kind as we go through this life. God bless you. And we will talk to you next week on Cooking Like a Pro here at KCNR AM and FM.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.
Whole Center.